Morning.
Morning, Your Honor.
As you're just getting organized there, I'm going to call the case. It's, if you could tell, is it Faizan, or could you pronounce that name? Faizan, thank you. This case is A24-1875, Daniela Marie Chavez, respondent, versus Faizan, appellant. Counsel for appellant, you will be alone making arguments today. The respondent did not file a brief, will not be making arguments, so we will hear from you for 15 minutes. When you start your argument, if you could state your name and the party you represent for the record, the podium goes up and down to accommodate your preference. And this case is being live streamed. This argument is being live streamed, but we retain only a audio version for our public website. So when you're ready to take the podium, go ahead. And as soon as you've set up and are ready to go, we're ready for you.
May it please the court, my name is Charles Klass, C-L-A-S, and I represent Appellant Faizan in this matter. I understand that I am the only party that is presenting argument, but I thought that it was still important to keep this case on for an oral argument to address certain specific issues within our brief. We have raised two main issues. One, whether or not the district court abused its discretion in issuing the HRO. They base that on two different reasons. And then second, whether or not appellant's due process rights were violated where no translator was used. And that's the issue that I wish to start with, is this translator issue, which especially in HRO cases, I'm not sure how often this comes up, because quite frankly, this is an issue that should fall to the attorney that is representing the person to make sure that their rights are being protected. I don't know why that didn't happen in this case, but I can tell when I review the record that this was not a hearing where the true essence of her testimony was properly conveyed to the court. I review the same record that the court has to review. I was not the attorney that represented appellant at the district court level. So I can only base it on that, just like the court can. The standard that we have appears to simply be whether or not the essence of what the testifier was trying to say was conveyed to the court. That did not happen. I think the best thing for the court to look to in a situation like this is not questions where the appellant was asked to answer a yes or no, but more open-ended questions that required the appellant to speak for multiple sentences at a time. You can find repeatedly in this transcript that appellant was asked one question and gave an answer that appears to be an attempt at answering that question, maybe as close to answering that question, but to people that speak English as a first language, doesn't seem to add up. Another example that I think is relevant is I counted 7 unintelligibles within the court transcript. I don't believe that any of those unintelligibles were found when respondent was testifying, or when the court was speaking, or when an attorney was asking a question. Those come solely from times where the appellant was making an attempt to answer a question. There doesn't appear to be any audio issues, otherwise we would expect those to show up in other people's testimony. This is a court reporter who could not understand appellant in 7 different situations. We also have very obvious cases where appellant was misgendering who she was speaking about. It appears that she was trying to address situations that involved the respondent in this case, who appeared to use the pronouns of she, and she was calling her he. Now, that might be an instance where the essence of her testimony was still being conveyed. The court could figure out through context clues that despite her misgendering the party, we knew who she was speaking about. But that's a great example for the court when they look at all the other testimony to know that this is a person that does not have a fine grasp on the English language. Had she used an interpreter, if that interpreter was misgendering when interpreting, we would think something was wrong. We would not expect that out of someone that would have been providing translation services for Ms. Zahn in this case. But of course, we didn't have a translator, and this is her just speaking herself. And when that happened, she couldn't even get the gender of who she was speaking about right multiple times. And again, while that may be an issue of, well, we can still tell what she meant, if we consider that in the context of everything else that we read in that transcript, it is confusing. Trying to make a record of this, having not been at the hearing, was confusing for myself. And I believe that the court, when they review specifically appellant's testimony in this case, will find that to be the same. Another issue within her testimony that the court can look to is, while cross-examination was very brief, I think what happened there was extremely telling. This wasn't appellant's attorney asking her questions. It was a pro se party now having an opportunity to cross-examine. It appears, based on the record, that appellant was unable to answer questions when respondent was asking them. Respondent asks a fairly straightforward question about whether or not she remembers something she testified to, and there's no response from appellant. Appellant's attorney has to jump in at this point and say, I don't think she understood that, or I don't think she got that. And at that point, it's appellant's attorney who re-asks the question to his own client on cross-examination in order to try and solicit a response. That's not normal. That reads to me as someone who is not understanding what's being asked of her. This court may be also asking themselves, well, we have a district court judge there who is supposed to be looking out for these things, who is supposed to be making sure that this is a fair hearing. Regardless of how the record reads, they were there in person and got to hear Ms. Zahn testify. If there was something that was amiss, the district court should have jumped in. And my response to that is what I wrote in my brief, which is, this appeared to be a chaotic hearing. We were dealing with a pro se person that was unrepresented, that was requiring a lot of work from the district court to keep on track and to make sure the hearing was going as smoothly as possible. And we also had many attempts from the district court to try and resolve the case before testimony even began, and certainly before Ms. Zahn's testimony even began. There were a lot of instances that required reprimanding from the district court judge to Ms. Zahn's attorney, also to the pro se party. This was a chaotic hearing. The district court tried to do their best to get through it, but this was an issue that was missed. And again, I'm not sure how one can look at all of the issues in the transcript with respect to Ms. Zahn's testimony and not see that something was wrong. And at least the question of whether or not a translator was required should have been raised. But not even that was addressed by the district court or by her attorney, despite what appeared to be all these issues in her testimony.
Mr. Klass, let's talk about the consequences of the absence of a translator. On appeal, on the merits, we're asking the question, based upon the first argument in your appellate brief, the question for us basically is whether there's evidence in the record to support the referee's findings, correct?
Correct.
And it seems like the portions of the evidentiary record most relevant to that is the testimony of Ms. Chavez. And if there are conflicts between the testimony of Ms. Chavez and the testimony of your client, we would defer to the district court's resolution of conflicting evidence. So, does the absence of a translator Given the issues you've raised in part one, is the absence of a translator relevant to our resolution of those issues?
It is, because there appeared to be multiple instances where appellant would have been given the opportunity to explain in more coherent detail her perspective and her memory of these allegations and these instances. That didn't happen because there was no translator. So the two are connected in that respects of when reviewing the district court's decision on the first issue, the majority of the argument is based on Ms. Chavez's testimony because we didn't really have testimony to go off of that would be relevant from appellant's perspective. Because again, that testimony was deficient because there was no translator. Going to the first issue, the district court appears to have found two bases for issuing the HRO. What is unclear from reading the transcript is whether or not the district court believes that the garbage bag assault was just one single incident of physical assault, which would give rise to an HRO, or whether that was part of a long line of continuing acts of unwanted harassment that had a substantial effect on the safety, security, and privacy. But if we are to separate the two and believe that the district court found two separate legal conclusions, which was we have a single incident of physical assault, but then we also have multiple instances of harassment through the garbage disposal, both of those fall short. With respect to the garbage bag incident, respondent Ms. Chavez uses the term hit to describe that. The district court seems to have taken our everyday understanding of what the word hit means when interpreting what happened here. But there is no further testimony as to what actually happened. Ms. Chavez appeared to have been wearing a boot on the leg where the garbage bag made contact with her. Ms. Chavez uses the word hit to describe this. But in terms of whether or not Ms. Zahn reached her arm back, swung the bag at her, whether or not Ms. Zahn charged at her and thrusted the bag into her, or whether or not this was merely an incident where the bag was being passed back and forth between two neighbors who were having a dispute, is unclear based on the record. Simply using the word hit in the context of the other testimony that Ms. Chavez gave in this instance does not actually describe in the detail required to find that there is an incident of physical assault. I cited one case, Peterson, which does not deal with an issue where there was any physical touching or any physical contact, but merely someone who got very close, someone who maybe spoke in a way that wasn't appropriate, someone who made threats, but ultimately made no physical contact. They found in that case that there does have to be an actual physical assault under the HRO statute. And while Ms. Chavez did describe making physical contact with the garbage bag in this instance, the same logic would apply in that if you are not describing how the garbage bag felt when it hit you, or you're not describing some kind of physical act that appellant did in this instance to actually make the bag hit you, and all you describe is this passing back and forth of a bag, that leaves the door open to whether or not this was actually a physical assault or whether this was merely a bag being passed back and forth that made contact with someone.
And even if we assume that it's not a physical assault, then it's still the district court's alternative finding was that it's an act having a substantial adverse effect on her safety, security, or privacy, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And
so,
that,
I mean, if we assume that, you know, I mean, in other words, if we give you the benefit of the doubt on that issue and assume that, isn't it true there's still two such incidents?
Well, that brings us to our second argument, which is if We do accept that with respect to the garbage bag. We then have to deal with the garbage disposal incidents or incidences, depending on how you view the testimony. And we argue this in our brief, and we continue to argue that when you look at the garbage disposal testimony in isolation, that also is not something that would rise to the level of a repeated incident that did have an effect on Ms. Chavez's safety, security, and privacy in this instance.
Why would that not affect her privacy? I understand maybe not safety and security, but why not her privacy?
Ultimately, this was a situation with two condos that shared walls. These things happen between neighbors when you are sharing plumbing and things of that nature. If one neighbor does something that always implicates the other person's space, apartment and condo neighbors would have these problems all the time. We cannot just allow for plumbing issues to be the basis of HROs, especially when she was using a garbage disposal that was in her home that she was allowed to use.
I think the referee specifically found that she used it for hours, and I think the testimony was that she used it continuously. I mean, isn't that pretty unusual conduct?
It would be, Your Honor, but it still is a garbage disposal within their home. And back to the original point to the interpreter, Ms. Zahn was not given the opportunity to clarify exactly why or how she was using the garbage disposal.
And the district court made a finding that she did it as a way to annoy Ms. Chavez, right?
That's correct. They did.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thanks for your arguments. Case is submitted. We'll have a decision out in a statutory time period. And with that, we are adjourned.
All rise.